Before the next lesson, I'm going to give you a little chance to know. Some of y'all know me. I'm Dan Hignight. I'm a retired minister. I've been in this presbytery since 1987. 30 years ago, last July 1st, this past month, my wife and family and I moved here. I pastored the John Knox Presbyterian Church, later Trinity Presbyterian Church, in Bossier City for 18 years. My wife, what pastor of the Plain Dealing Fields, the three churches in Plain Dealing. So we've been here for a while and have worked with First Church and Broadmoor and all the churches in Shreveport-Bossier on vacation church school. For many years, my daughter and I were the lead craft people for Bible school. And I was thinking today, see why I have all this white hair. The children, I think, if I added up correctly, that we had in first grade are all in high school by now. So it's been a few years. But I'm delighted to be back here today and be with you all. The epistle lessons from 1 Thessalonians. First Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 12 through 18. I appeal to you, brothers and sisters, to respect those who labor among you and have charge of you in the Lord and admonish you. Esteem them very highly in love because of their work. Be at peace among yourselves, and we urge you, beloved, to admonish the idlers, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak. Be patient with all of them. See that none repays evil for evil, but always seek to do good to one another and to all. Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. Do not quench the spirit, but test everything and hold fast to what is good. Abstain from any form of evil. Dear friends, this is the word of the Lord. One thing I didn't mention is I seldom preach from the pulpit. So I'm not going to be running up and down the aisles, you know, speaking in tongues or anything. But I know that kind of makes some people nervous to do something a little different. I was telling Gloria, I learned to do this when my wife was in seminary in Austin. If there was a church that needed the sacraments, they called on me. Otherwise, seminary students got the chance to go first. And we went to this little darling country church that was over 100 years old out in the middle of a field. And I don't remember the town. But the church was pretty much untouched. I don't think they had done much to it in the last 100 years, including no air conditioning. And so we get there just in the nick of time to start because that's before we had GPS and it was written instructions from one of the members. But we get there and it's hot. They have been, wasps have built a big nest in the sanctuary, so everyone was outside while they were chasing the wasp out, which I thought, oh, okay. If I get stung, we're going to have a lot of fun. You'll hear things that you wouldn't want to hear being said during a church and a sermon. Well, the people were being really kind and wanted, you know, to cool people down. And they had brought big, you know, those great big fans that, like, put at shops or garages and places. They had one turned on the congregation, and one they turned on me so I could stay cool. But the second he turned it on, my sermon, my prayers, and everything else literally flew out the window behind me. It just, before I could do anything, they're going flying out, and, you know, everyone's, oh, we'll go get it. I kept saying, no, don't worry about it. We'll just handle it. From that day on, I decided I don't need to be tied completely to a manuscript. And so I find this a little better because the early church, much of the preaching was conversational. and I like that. The focus today is to pray without ceasing, pray constantly. Now, when I started going to church in junior high, my family were not church people. This was one of the lessons that was on the lectionary. And I remember thinking, how can you pray constantly? That just didn't make much sense to me. You know, it's particularly when the only prayers I'd heard, because I hadn't heard any home, were at church, you know, the typical Almighty and everlasting God through whom the whole company of heaven and earth are named. I thought, I can't do that. But then over time, I began to realize that's not what all praying is. You know, praying isn't just us talking to God. Prayer is a conversation, a relationship with God, which I appreciate so much. That works so well with the children's sermon. And so I started to study prayer and found out in Jewish tradition, males were expected to pray three times a day. And they usually, it was a rote prayer they recited. Women were expected to pray one time a day. And so when the church developed and grew out of Jewish tradition and then also with the Gentile tradition, understandings of prayer from the Gentile world kind of got mixed in with prayers from the Jewish tradition. And so there was this kind of balance. And then as Christianity grew from a movement to an organized religion, the church kind of thought they need to make it regimen how you pray and what you pray. Well, as it went on, I don't know whether you ever heard of the Desert Fathers and Mothers or not, but they were people who devoted their life to serving God in prayer by separating themselves from everyone else. They would literally go into the deserts. Most of them were in Egypt, where they set up, and they would spend their time praying. And then as the movement moved with the Desert Mothers and Fathers, came, well, maybe we should have some rules. You know, you get together and you start to do things. If you remember being on the playground, the first thing you want to know what the rules are. And if you don't have rules, you make them up. Well, that's what the Desert Mothers and Fathers were doing. They were deciding, what do we do when all these people come and want to pray? And so they said, well, we need to pray 100 times a day. If I was confused about praying constantly, praying 100 times a day was just like, what? Because in my mind, prayer was what I said. But what they were trying to teach is that prayer isn't just words and thoughts. Prayer is being in a relationship. So to pray constantly means to be open to what God is doing in your life and for us to be conscious about what we're doing for God. So to pray 100 times a day, I thought, I'm going to try that, see what it's like. We had done a Lenten study years ago on this subject, and I thought, well, I'm going to see what would it be like if everything all day was thinking about relationship with God. And so I start off by saying prayers for every time I heard a first responder, an ambulance or a fire truck or the police going with their sirens on, I would say a prayer for the safety of the first responders and for those whom they're serving. Or going by a school, would say a quick prayer that God would bless the people who are at the school, from students to teachers to custodians to cooks to everyone. Then I realized, well, I'm getting a lot of prayer in, but it's kind of one-sided. It's kind of like, here's my list, God. Would you mind looking over this? And, you know, if I could have it filled by 4 o'clock pickup, I would appreciate it. But over the years, I've grown to understand that prayer is a relationship, a communion that we may not even see is going on. I don't know how many times this happened to you, but it happens to me. somebody will call, or unless they text or Facebook, with a comment or with an article or something that I really needed to hear that day. I would think, wow. It's just like they knew what was going on with me. I call those divine coincidences, because I believe that God is at work through those situations to speak with me. And no, it's not the divine voice. I don't hear the voice, you know, hello, God, this is God, Dan, are you listening? But God speaks to us through others, through family, through friends, through situations. But I find for most of us over the years, I found that sometimes praying is hard, especially listening part. We're pretty good at talking to, but not necessarily listening to God. Today, a way of praying, a meditation that I learned about 40 years ago that has been instrumental in my life, in my spiritual life, in my everyday life. It's a meditation where we physically see ourselves talking with Jesus. Now, I'm going to teach you all, and I realize doing this in the pew is not the most comfortable way of doing it. But I hope you will take it with you and remember and try it sometime when you can get relaxed, get comfortable. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to take 3 deep breaths to kind of just get our body in tune to relaxing. So I'm going to count to 5. I invite you to take a deep breath through your nostrils. Then I'll count from 5 to 1 to exhale it. We'll do that 3 times. Try to be as comfortable as you can in the situation. Okay, let's breathe in. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Exhale, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Another time. Breathe in, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Exhale, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And our last one. Breathe in, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And exhale, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. If you're comfortable doing this with your eyes shut, that is very good. If you're one of these people that's not, that's okay. You don't have to. Just listen to the prompts. Imagine yourself getting up from the pew, from this sanctuary, and walking out the door. But as you walk out the door, it's not Shreveport as we know it. It's not a parking lot. It's the most beautiful place you have ever imagined. It's a beautiful day. The grass is green. Birds are chirping. There's a slight breeze. The clouds in the sky just fairly float along. Take a moment. Look around you. Smell the smells. Smell the grass. Feel the breeze. Listen to the birds or the chatter of squirrels. As you stand there taking it all in, you find a path. It's a well-worn path, and you decide to take it. You have no worries, nothing to keep you, so you meander down the path, continuing to notice all the things around you. There's a field of wildflowers. You're taking the beauty of nature. You continue to walk down the path, and you see a bench. A bench just sitting by the path, and you think it's a great place to go and sit and just relax. You sit on the bench, and you notice just a few yards in front of you is a little stream going by. You hear the water going over the rocks. You see animals coming to take a drink. You just saw a little fish flop. There's turtles. It's nature at its best. You sit there and all your worries and cares go away because here there's nothing to bother you, nothing that needs to concern you at the moment. As you sit there, you notice someone is walking across the field towards you. You're not sure who that is, but you don't feel threatened. You feel at peace. And as the person gets closer, you recognize that it's Jesus coming towards you. As he approaches, you stand up, you embrace each other, you laugh, you act like friends who have not seen each other in years. You exchange a few pleasantries, and then you sit down on the bench together. You can be silent because it's a silence between friends that you don't need to have words to feel close to one another. After a while, Jesus turns to you and says, "What can I do for you?" Whatever's the first thing that comes to your mind, tell Jesus. Don't filter it. Don't try to think of something. Just the first thing that comes to mind. When Jesus says, "What can I do for you?" you tell it to him. He's totally engaged with you. He nods to let you know he's heard what you said. He's taking it into consideration. And for now, that's enough. He doesn't tell you how or when he will do it, but you're okay. You know that he's in charge and he has it now. We settle back into silence for a few minutes. And then you turn and look at Jesus and say, "Jesus, what can I do for you?" Again, whatever the first thing you hear in your mind and in your heart is probably what you need to hear from Jesus. His response may make perfect sense to you now, or you may be sitting there thinking, "I have no idea what he's talking about." But in your heart, in your soul, you know that what he's told you will have meaning. If not now, it will become clear later. You continue to sit there, watching what's around you. Continue smelling the smells of the wildflowers and the grass. You see a herd of deer that's just wandering by, and you know that in this world, the world where you are now with Jesus, all is at peace. Jesus tells you that he needs to be going. You stand up, you embrace each other, feel the warmth of his arms around you. Feel the peace that fills your soul simply because you have touched him and he has touched you. Know that you've been in the presence of the divine and the divine is always present with you. You watch Jesus walk off and you decide it's time to go back for you too. You leave the bench. You take in the scenes that you've seen and you find the path. You start to walk up that path. Your walk is a little lighter. There's a sense of joy that you hadn't noticed before. And an understanding that things are not always what we think they are. That truth and reality comes from something like this. You're almost back to the door of the church. Come through the door. Come back and find your place in the pew. A little cushion on the bottom, a little hardness on the back. That's kind of symbolic of how life is sometimes. We're going to take one more deep breath, and then we're going to come back completely to where we are. Deep breath in on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and exhale. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Some people find this sort of meditation helpful. It has been for me. Sometimes it takes a little practice. But throughout the years, when I've gone into a very dark space, thinking, I can't do this, I'm not going to go on, I'm just going to, find something else to do, I would do this meditation. And at least for me, every time the word that I got from Jesus made sense in a little while. And it kind of changed the trajectory of my life, of my ministry. If y'all think ministers don't go to dark places, well, you probably haven't talked to many or haven't had many honest ones talk with you. But you don't have to be in a dark place. It's going to be a wonderful place. Prayer is, as Richard Rohr says, is a lifestyle. It's not just praying a few prayers and go on. It's constantly being aware that God is reaching out to us in ways we may not think about, as I said, through friends or family or reading something that just resonates with you like that. When we can pray without ceasing, we're opening ourselves up to be vulnerable to God. We're opening ourselves up to be vulnerable to others. Because sometimes what we're called to do isn't the most accepted thing by all people. But when we do it, we find a whole new realm of joy and happiness, strength and contentment. Amen.